Chapter 14. Presently the thing happened which we were dreading. There was a sound of tramping and scraping outside, and a crowd came solemnly in, with heads uncovered, and laid the two drowned bodies on the bed. Oh, my God! That poor mother cried out, and fell on her knees, and put her arms about her dead boy, and began to cover the wet face with kisses. Oh, it was I that sent him, and I have been his death. If I had obeyed, and kept him in the house, this would not have happened. And I am rightly punished. I was cruel to him last night, and him begging me, his own mother, to be his friend. And so she went on, and all the women cried, and pitied her, and tried to comfort her, but she could not forgive herself, and could not be comforted, and kept on saying, if as he had not sent him out he would be alive and well now, and she was the cause of his death. It shows how foolish people are when they blame themselves for anything they have done. Satan knows, and he said nothing happens, that your first act hasn't arranged to happen and made inevitable. And so, of your own motion you can't ever alter the scheme, or do a thing, that will break a link. Next we heard screams, and Frau Brandt came wildly plowing and plunging through the crowd with her dress in disorder and hair flying loose, and flung herself upon her dead child with moans, and kisses and pleadings and endearments. And by she rose up almost exhausted with her outpourings of passionate emotion, and clenched her fist, and lifted it toward the sky, and her tear-drenched face grew hard and resentful, and she said, for nearly 2 weeks I have had dreams and presentiments and warnings, that death was going to strike what was most precious to me, and night and day I have groveled in the dirt before him praying him to have pity on my innocent child, and save it from harm, and here is his answer. Why, he had saved it from harm, but she did not know. She wiped the tears from her eyes and cheeks, and stood a while gazing down at the child, and caressing its face and its hair with her hands. Then she spoke again in that bitter tone, colon, but in his hard heart is no compassion. I will never pray again. She gathered her dead child to her bosom and strode away, the crowd falling back to let her pass, and smitten dumb by the awful words they had heard. Ah, that poor woman! It is as Satan said, we do not know good fortune from bad, and are always mistaking the one for the other. Many a time, since I have heard people pray to God, to spare the life of sick persons, but I have never done it. Both funerals took place at the same time in our little church next day. Everybody was there, including the party guests. Satan was there too. Which was proper, for it was on account of his efforts that the funerals had happened. Nicholas had departed this life without absolution, and a collection was taken up for masses, to get him out of purgatory. Only 2/3 of the required money was gathered, and the parents were going to try to borrow the rest, but Satan furnished it. He told us privately that there was no purgatory, but he had contributed in order that Nicholas's parents and their friends might be saved from worry and distress. We thought it very good of him, but he said money did not cost him anything. At the graveyard the body of little Lisa was seized for debt by a carpenter to whom the mother owed 50 groschen for work done the year before. As he had never been able to pay this, and was not able now. The carpenter took the corpse home, and kept it 4 days in his cellar, the mother weeping and imploring about his house all the time. Then he buried it in his brother's cattle yard, without religious ceremonies. It drove the mother wild with grief and shame, and she forsook her work, and went daily about the town, cursing the carpenter and blaspheming the laws of the emperor and the church, and it was pitiful to see. Seppi asked Satan to interfere, but he said the carpenter and the rest were members of the human race, and were acting quite neatly for that species of animal. He would interfere if he found a horse acting in such a way, and we must inform him when we came across that kind of horse doing that kind of human thing, so that he could stop it. We believed this was sarcasm, for of course there wasn't any such horse. But after a few days we found that we could not abide that poor woman's distress, so we begged Satan to examine her several possible careers, and see if he could not change her, to her profit, to a new one. He said the longest of her careers as they now stood, gave her 42 years to live, and her shortest one 29, and that both were charged with grief and hunger and cold and pain. The only improvement he could make would be to enable her to skip a certain 3 minutes from now, and he asked us if he should do it. This was such a short time to decide in that we went to pieces with nervous excitement, and before we could pull ourselves together and ask for particulars, he said the time would be up in a few more seconds. So then we gasped out, "Do it." "It is done," he said. "She was going around a corner. I have turned her back. It has changed her career." "Then what will happen, Satan?" "It is happening now. She is having words with Fisher, the weaver. In his anger, Fisher will straightway do what he would not have done but for this accident. He was present when she stood over her child's body and uttered those blasphemies. What will he do? He is doing it now, betraying her. In 3 days she will go to the stake." We could not speak. We were frozen with horror, for if we had not meddled with her career, she would have been spared this awful fate. Satan noticed these thoughts, and said, "What you are thinking is strictly human-like, that is to say, foolish. The woman is advantaged. Die when she might, she would go to heaven. By this prompt death she gets 29 years more of heaven than she is entitled to, and escapes 29 years of misery here." A moment before we were bitterly making up our minds that we would ask no more favors of Satan for friends of ours, for he did not seem to know any way to do a person a kindness but by killing him. But the whole aspect of the case was changed now, and we were glad of what we had done, and full of happiness in the thought of it. After a little I began to feel troubled about Fisher, and asked, timidly, "Does this episode change Fisher's life scheme, Satan?" "Change it? Why, certainly. And radically. If he had not met Frau Brandt a while ago, he would die next year, 34 years of age. Now he will live to be 90, and have a pretty prosperous and comfortable life of it, as human lives go." We felt a great joy and pride in what we had done for Fisher, and were expecting Satan to sympathize with this feeling, but he showed no sign, and this made us uneasy. We waited for him to speak, but he didn't. So, to assuage our solicitude, we had to ask him if there was any defect in Fisher's good luck. Satan considered the question a moment, then said, with some hesitation, "Well, the fact is, it is a delicate point. Under his several former possible life careers, he was going to heaven." We were aghast. "H, Satan. And under this one, there, don't be so distressed. You were sincerely trying to do him a kindness. Let that comfort you." "Oh, dear, dear, that cannot comfort us. You ought to have told us what we were doing, then we wouldn't have acted so." But it made no impression on him. He had never felt a pain or a sorrow, and did not know what they were in any really informing way. He had no knowledge of them except theoretically, that is to say, intellectually. And of course, that is no good. One can never get any but a loose and ignorant notion of such things except by experience. We tried our best to make him comprehend the awful thing that had been done, and how we were compromised by it, but he couldn't seem to get hold of it. He said he did not think it important where Fisher went to. In heaven he would not be missed, there were plenty there. We tried to make him see that he was missing the point entirely, that Fisher, and not other people, was the proper one to decide about the importance of it. But it all went for nothing. He said he did not care for Fisher, there were plenty more Fishers. The next minute Fisher went by on the other side of the way, and it made us sick and faint to see him, remembering the doom that was upon him, and we the cause of it, and how unconscious he was that anything had happened to him. You could see by his elastic step and his alert manner that he was well satisfied with himself for doing that hard turn for poor Frau Brandt. He kept glancing back over his shoulder expectantly. And, sure enough, pretty soon Frau Brandt followed after, in charge of the officers and wearing jingling chains. A mob was in her wake, jeering and shouting, blasphemer and heretic. And some among them were neighbors and friends of her happier days. Some were trying to strike her, and the officers were not taking as much trouble as they might to keep them from it. Oh, stop them, Satan! It was out before we remembered that he could not interrupt them for a moment without changing their whole after lives. He puffed a little puff toward them with his lips and they began to reel and stagger and grab at the empty air. Then they broke apart and fled in every direction, shrieking, as if in intolerable pain. He had crushed a rib of each of them with that little puff. We could not help asking if their life chart was changed. Yes, entirely. Some have gained ears, some have lost them. Some few will profit in various ways by the change, but only that few. We did not ask if we had brought poor Fisher's luck to any of them. We did not wish to know. We fully believed in Satan's desire to do us kindnesses, but we were losing confidence in his judgment. It was at this time that our growing anxiety to have him look over our life charts and suggest improvements began to fade out and give place to other interests. For a day or two the whole village was a chattering turmoil over Frau Brandt's case, and over the mysterious calamity that had overtaken the mob, and at her trial the place was crowded. She was easily convicted of her blasphemies, for she uttered those terrible words again, and said she would not take them back. When warned that she was imperiling her life, she said they could take it in welcome, she did not want it, she would rather live with the professional devils in perdition than with these imitators in the village. They accused her of breaking all those ribs by witchcraft, and asked her if she was not a witch. She answered scornfully, "No. If I had that power would any of you holy hypocrites be alive 5 minutes? No, I would strike you all dead. Pronounce your sentence, and let me go. I am tired of your society." So they found her guilty, and she was excommunicated, and cut off from the joys of heaven, and doomed to the fires of hell. Then she was clothed in a coarse robe, and delivered to the secular arm, and conducted to the marketplace, the bell solemnly tolling the while. We saw her chained to the stake, and saw the first film of blue smoke rise on the still air. Then her hard face softened, and she looked upon the packed crowd in front of her and said, with gentleness, "We played together once, in long agone days, when we were innocent little creatures. For the sake of that, I forgive you. We went away then, and did not see the fires consume her, but we heard the shrieks, although we put our fingers in our ears. When they ceased we knew she was in heaven, notwithstanding the excommunication. And we were glad of her death, and not sorry that we had brought it about. One day, a little while after this, Satan appeared again. We were always watching out for him, for life was never very stagnant when he was by. He came upon us at that place in the woods, where we had first met him. Being boys, we wanted to be entertained. We asked him to do a show for us. Very well, he said. Would you like to see a history of the progress of the human race? Its development of that product which it calls civilization? We said we should. So, with a thought, he turned the place into the Garden of Eden, and we saw Abel praying by his altar. Then Cain came walking toward him with his club, and did not seem to see us, and would have stepped on my foot if I had not drawn it in. He spoke to his brother in a language which we did not understand. Then he grew violent and threatening, and we knew what was going to happen, and turned away our heads for the moment. But we heard the crash of the blows, and heard the shrieks and the groans. Then there was silence, and we saw Abel lying in his blood and gasping out his life, and Cain standing over him, and looking down at him, vengeful and unrepentant. Then the vision vanished, and was followed by a long series of unknown wars, murders, and massacres. Next we had the flood, and the ark tossing around in the stormy waters, with lofty mountains in the distance showing veiled and dim through the rain. Satan said, "The progress of your race was not satisfactory. It is to have another chance now." The scene changed, and we saw Noah overcome with wine. Next, we had Sodom and Gomorrah, and the attempt to discover two or three respectable persons there, as Satan described it. Next, Lot and his daughters in the cave. Next came the Hebraic Wars, and we saw the victors massacre the survivors and their cattle, and save the young girls alive, and distribute them around. Next we had Jael, and saw her slip into the tent, and drive the nail into the temple of her sleeping guest. And we were so close, that when the blood gushed out it trickled in a little red stream to our feet, and we could have stained our hands in it, if we had wanted to. Next we had Egyptian wars, Greek wars, Roman wars, hideous drenchings of the earth with blood. And we saw the treacheries of the Romans toward the Carthaginians, and the sickening spectacle of the massacre of those brave people. Also we saw Caesar invade Britain not that those barbarians had done him any harm, but because he wanted their land, and desired to confer the blessings of civilization upon their widows and orphans, as Satan explained. Next, Christianity was born. Then ages of Europe passed in review before us, and we saw Christianity and civilization march hand in hand through those ages, leaving famine and death and desolation in their wake, and other signs of the progress of the human race, as Satan observed. And always we had wars, and more wars, and still other wars all over Europe, all over the world. Sometimes in the private interest of royal families, Satan said, sometimes to crush a weak nation, but never a war started by the aggressor for any clean purpose. There is no such war in the history of the race. Now, said Satan, you have seen your progress down to the present, and you must confess that it is wonderful in its way. We must now exhibit the future. He showed us slaughters more terrible in their destruction of life, more devastating in their engines of war, than any we had seen. You perceive, he said, that you have made continual progress. Cain did his murder with a club, the Hebrews did their murders with javelins and swords, the Greeks and Romans added protective armor, and the fine arts of military organization and generalship. The Christian has added guns and gunpowder. A few centuries from now he will have so greatly improved the deadly effectiveness of his weapons of slaughter, that all men will confess that without Christian civilization war must have remained a poor and trifling thing to the end of time. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.